Throughout its first three centuries, the church went through unimaginable persecution from the Roman Empire, though all the time growing and spreading. It began with a small group from the backwaters of the Roman Empire, and after two or three centuries have gone by, that same group and its descendants have somehow taken over the Roman Empire and become the official religion. In fact, the only tolerated religion of the Roman Empire by the end of the 4th century. And the key event in this extraordinary turn of events was when the Roman Emperor himself became a Christian. Constantine was a successful general, the son of a successful general who had also been a Christian. And in 312 AD, there were two claimants to the imperial throne. Maxentius held the capital city, Rome, and most of Italy, but Constantine held most of the Western Empire and had the support of most of the army and had marched on Rome. In October 312, he was camped north of the city, preparing for what would be the showdown with his rival, but worried because he did not have the resources to sustain a long siege. In this struggle, Constantine was convinced that he needed more powerful aid than his military forces could give him, and so he sought the help of the God in whom his father had believed. Constantine called on God with earnest prayer to reveal to him who he was and stretch forth his right hand to help him in his present difficulties. And while he was thus praying with fervent entreaty, a most extraordinary sign appeared to him from heaven. About noon, when the day was already beginning to decline, he saw with his own eyes the sign of a cross of light in the heavens above the sun and bearing the inscription, "By this symbol you will conquer." He was struck with amazement by the sight, and his whole army witnessed the miracle. He said he was unsure what this apparition could mean, but while he continued to ponder, night suddenly came on. In his sleep, the Christ of God appeared to him with the same sign that he had seen in the heavens and commanded him to make a likeness of that sign which he had seen, and to use it as a safeguard in all his engagements with his enemies. And so, at the break of day, he rose and told his friends about the marvel. Then he called together the workers in gold and precious stones, sat in the midst of them, and described to them the sign he had seen, telling them to represent it in gold and precious stones. It was made in the following manner: a long spear overlaid with gold with a transverse bar laid over it formed the figure of the cross. A wreath of gold and precious stones was fixed to the top with the symbol of the Savior's name in it, the first two Greek letters of Christ's name, the row being intersected by chi at its center. These two letters look like X and P. Shortly after this, to everyone's surprise, Maxentius decided to risk a battle outside the city walls, and Constantine's army won a decisive victory, forcing their opponents back across the Milvian Bridge into the city. Constantine took the city and became emperor, apparently convinced that the God of the Christians had given him victory. And as emperor, he constantly made use of this sign of salvation as a safeguard against every adverse and hostile power, and commanded that others similar to it should be carried at the head of all his armies. With this standard leading the way, he consolidated his power by conquering eventually not only the West, but also the Greek East, where there were many more Christians. Within one person's lifetime, the empire went from the most savage of its several persecutions of Christians to embracing Christianity. Constantine's new faith was reflected in his imperial policy. He outlawed infanticide, the abuse of slaves and peasants, and crucifixion, and he made Sunday a day of rest. He rebuilt Jerusalem and helped the bishops of the church to iron out a unitary policy of what a true Christian believes. In 314, three bishops from Britain, the bishops of London, York, and Lincoln, attended the First Council of Arles, one of several synods convened by Constantine. So there was much that was positive about Constantine's vision and conversion, not least the spread of Christianity across the Roman Empire. However, we must also recognize that his actions and understanding changed Christianity irrevocably. Christianity moved from being a marginalized, subversive, and persecuted movement, secretly gathering in houses and catacombs, to being the favored religion in the empire. Christianity moved from being a dynamic, revolutionary, social, and spiritual movement to being a religious institution with its attendant structures, priesthood, and sacraments. While there is much talk of victory in both the New Testament and the early church, the victory that is spoken of there is that of Christ in his death and resurrection over the hostile powers that hold humanity in subjection, those powers being variously understood as the devil, sin, the law, and death. There is a victory over spiritual powers which holds sway over all people. Christ died for all human beings without exception, and he taught that we should love our enemies and repay evil with good. Constantine's vision, dream, and standard are therefore, in some respects, a complete reversal of Christ's teaching and actions. Constantine began the establishment of what became Christendom by showering Christian ministers with every possible honor, treating them favorably as people who were consecrated to the service of his God, having them accompany him on his travels, believing that the God they served would help him as a result. Instead of renouncing wealth and power, Christian ministers were gaining it. Constantine gave vast amounts of money from his own personal treasury to the churches of God for the enlarging and heightening of their sacred buildings and for decorating the sanctuaries of the church. The church was now able to have Bibles copied at public expense. It was finally able to have public Christian architecture and large basilicas. And so a comfortable symbiotic relationship between the empire and the church developed, a relationship which came to define the cultural powerhouse of Europe and the West. It came about, however, through a reversal of Christ's teaching about power and wealth. And the dilemmas caused by these changes are, I think, captured well in Patti Smith's song entitled Constantine's Dream, of which we have heard an extract read today. In the complete song, we encounter St. Francis and Columbus, as well as Constantine and Piero della Francesca. Constantine's dream, the song suggests, led to the art of della Francesca and the discoveries of Columbus, but conflicted with the simplicity of Francis's lifestyle that was close to that of Christ, and the harmony of his relationship with the natural world around him. When he arrived in the New World, Columbus encountered the same kind of unspoilt beauty that St. Francis enjoyed, and yet his arrival would lead to the destruction of that unspoilt beauty in the name of empire. The song ends with the 21st century advancing like the angel that had come to Constantine, and Columbus sees all of nature aflame in the apocalyptic night, and the dream of the troubled King Constantine dissolved into light. In this way, it poses the very valid question as to whether the power and wealth that the church gained because of Constantine's dream was actually a blessing or a curse.